The following are devotional exhortations regarding the recent virus outbreak and its effect on our church's services and ministry, shared by Pastor Jeff Riddle and Elder Jeff Clark of Christ Reformed Baptist Church of Louisa, Virginia, before the start of the morning service on Sunday, March 15th of 2020.
Again, these are unusual times. A few weeks ago, I was preaching from 2 Kings 7, about a time in Israel's history when everything changed within one day for all the people living within Jerusalem, which was besieged at the time. On one day, a donkey's head sold for 80 pieces of silver, and a cob of dove's dung was sold for 4 pieces of silver. And the next day, a measure of flour and 2 measures of barley could be had for barely a shekel. One day, people were starving, and the next day, people were feasting. In that case, it was a dramatic change from deprivation to abundance. This week has witnessed a very different kind of turn in our lives. A week ago, on the Lord's Day, I prayed in the pastoral prayer for those suffering from this virus, and we prayed that the Lord might use this to awaken men's consciences to issues of life and death. Little did we know how dramatically He would choose to do that. And as some of us were talking back in the fellowship hall earlier, it was really over a day, really from Tuesday to Wednesday, or maybe Wednesday to Thursday of this week. Several years ago, I resolved not to allow my preaching to be dictated by the headlines of media. That's why you very rarely hear me speak from the pulpit about current events. And I even don't write about these things on my blog or vision articles and so forth. But current circumstances are impossible to avoid addressing. On one hand, as we move forward, we don't want to act in ways that are reckless and careless with respect to our own lives and the lives of others. On the other hand, we think it is important that those who are called to do so would have the opportunity to assemble for prayer and worship. We plan to continue meeting in our regular services in coming weeks, but that could change. Whether or not we continue to meet in person, we will also look at the possibility of live streaming our services. And of course, we always record our services and they'll be posted to Sermon Audio and can be listened to after the fact. We want to continue to do as much as possible what is normal and ordinary for us to do. We will continue, God willing, to preach through 2 Kings on Lord's Day mornings and the 1689 Confession and Lord's Day afternoons. We will not have a new series on how to deal with the coronavirus. If you feel uncomfortable about attending our services, or if you are in a category that would make you more vulnerable to contracting this virus or to suffering harmful consequences that result from it, then please feel free not to attend. As I told someone earlier, if you need to leave after this morning service without having any more contact with anyone, wash your hands, leave and go home, that's perfectly all right. If you miss our services, you can always listen online. You can keep the Sabbath at home. We don't want to place any stigma or lay any guilt on anyone who feels they are not able to be here in person. And I took a vow before my family, before we turned to the driveway, and I said, I'm not going to joke about it. This is serious stuff. We know that. And we don't want to be flippant about it. And again, we don't want to lay any guilt or any stigma on anyone who feels that they're not able to be here for whatever reason. We will also try to use some basic precautions in our meeting, including the meeting today. First, let's try to avoid handshakes and hugs, hard as that might be, and keep some distance in our conversations and fellowship. Second, make sure to wash your hands thoroughly throughout the day, and especially when you leave after you've had contact with people and door handles and other things today. Thirdly, for now, we are suspending our observance of the Lord's Supper. So we will not have the Lord's Supper this afternoon. Fourthly, though we are having our fellowship meal today, we ask parents to assist any children under age 13. So don't have the children serve themselves. Have a parent serve them. We may determine to suspend this meal in coming weeks in favor of asking individuals and families to bring their own food for lunch. Or we may determine to hold only the morning service and dispense with the fellowship meal and the afternoon service for a season. There are also, of course, other practical things that we can do. We can keep in touch with one another. We can pray for each other. We can encourage each other on the phone or online. We can bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. And I'm recording this so that we'll post this so that people who are not here today can also be able to hear this. And, of course, we would encourage you to remember your stewardship so the church can meet its needs. If you cannot be here, then send your offerings to Tom Wolfolk, our treasurer, or to the church's P.O. box so that we can meet those obligations. When one examines church history, one finds that believers have lived through many circumstances much like these over the years. As Solomon said, there is indeed nothing new under the sun. Some of you know that I've been on sermon audio in a series reading through the earliest church history written by a fellow named Eusebius of Caesarea. And I've been doing this as a series. It's 10 books in length, and I've been reading it chapter by chapter. I started last February, and I'm in book 7 now. And I have people literally all over the world who are following it. I often hear from them. But I looked ahead. It's a couple chapters ahead of where I am. But there's an interesting chapter in here that is where the author Eusebius cites a letter that was written by a man named Dionysius, who was the pastor of a church in Alexandria, Egypt. And after the church had gone through a series of persecution under the emperor Decius, where many people had been killed, many people had died as martyrs, in the providence of God, a disease, a plague, broke out in the city of Alexandria right after this. Let me just read a little bit of what he wrote. He said, "But when the briefest breathing space had been granted us, there descended upon us this disease, a thing that is to them," meaning the pagans, "more fearful than any other object of fear, more cruel than any calamity whatsoever. And, as one of their own writers declared, the only thing of all that proved worse than what was expected. Yet to us it was not so, but no less than the other misfortunes, a source of discipline and testing. For indeed it did not leave us untouched, although it attacked the heathen with great strength." Following these remarks, he adds as follows: "The most, at all events, of our brethren, in their exceeding love and affection for the brotherhood, were unsparing of themselves, and clave to one another, visiting the sick without a thought as to the danger, assiduously ministering to them, tending them in Christ, and so most gladly departed this life along with them, being infected with the disease from others, drawing upon themselves the sickness from their neighbors, and willingly taking over their pains. And many, when they had cared and restored to health others, died themselves, thus transferring their deaths to themselves, and then, in very deed, making good the popular saying that always seems to be merely an expression of courtesy, for in departing, they became their devoted servants. In this manner, the best, at any rate, of our brethren departed this life, certain elders and deacons and some of the laity receiving great commendation, so that this form of death seemed in no respect to come behind martyrdom, being the outcome of much piety and strong faith. So too, the bodies of the saints they would take up in their open hands to their bosom, closing their eyes and shutting their mouths, carrying them on their shoulders and laying them out. They would cling to them, embrace them, bathe and adorn them with their burial clothes, and after a little receive the same services themselves, for those that were left behind were ever following those that went before. But the conduct of the heathen was the exact opposite. Even those who were in the first stages of the disease, they even cast them in the roads half dead and treat the unburied corpses as vile refuse. In their attempts to avoid the spreading and contagion of the death plague, a thing which, for all their devices, it was not easy for them to escape. That was in the year 250 that plague hit Alexandria. And I know of at least one historian, a historical sociologist named Rodney Stark, who studied that and said that he points to that as one of the reasons for the growth of Christianity in the third century was the way Christians behaved during not only the persecution, the Decian persecution, but also in the aftermath. That happened again in the third century. Moving a little further, in 1665, there was the so-called Great Plague or Black Death that hit London. It is estimated that in 18 months, 100,000 people, or about a quarter of the population of London, died. Many Christians ministered heroically to their own brethren and to their neighbors during that time. A few years after the plague, a Puritan minister named Ralph Venning wrote a devotional work that he titled The Plague of Plagues. It's reprinted by the Banner of Truth under the title The Sinfulness of Sin. Though he never directly describes the plague or makes any contemporaneous reference to it, this great trial through which the nation had passed and his city had passed, the metaphor was clear. The plague of plagues. But it wasn't about the Black Death. It was about a sin. It was about wickedness that infects and endangers every man's heart. At one point, Ralph Venning writes in that work, "Keep out of harm's way. Enter not, put not a foot into the way of the wicked," quoting Proverbs 4, 14 and 15. "And if you have been so foolishly froward, yet do not go on in the way of evil men, but avoid it. Pass not by it. Turn from it and pass away. You cannot stand at too great a distance from sin." Social distancing. You cannot stand at too great a distance from sin. So friends, let us learn from the saints of old and let us be wise. Let us exercise prudential common wisdom. Let's not be foolhardy. Let's persevere in contentedness, and even enjoy in these circumstances. Whatever befalls, let us remember the opening to Psalm 97, the Lord reigneth. Now, friends, this morning, let us worship together. I say that, but before we worship, I want to give Jeff Clark also an opportunity to say a few words and offer a testimony if he would like to.
We've talked about this at some length and considered it a great deal. Pastor graciously regards us as a special case. We're in that group that is particularly vulnerable, as is our at least one other. And at any rate, it calls to mind Noah's Ark, Noah's flood. Whatever befalls us will be nothing but what we deserve. And what if we're spared, it'll be spared by grace alone. The unknown is the thing that is probably the most frightening. If we knew what we were dealing with, we would know more correctly how to prepare for it and how to avoid it. But we don't know what we're dealing with. And the people that ordinarily would know and would be telling us, they don't know either. So that makes us all the more apprehensive. So what shall we fear? I think nothing at all. As the Lord looked on the time of at Noah's day, and he saw what? All men were corrupt through and through. All men deserved to die. Then. But he made a promise to Eve. He had made a promise. He said the deliverer will come from the seed of a woman. If he exterminated all, the promise would be broken. Genetically, there had to be the seed of a woman. So he preserved eight alive to start again. And Noah built a 450-foot coffin. As the old world died to him, and God sailed him to a new place. No sail, no motor, just God and God's providence. What are we trusting in today? Are we trusting in what we can see? What we can do? Are we trusting in God's providence? He shut Noah in. He let Noah out. There was a life after that for Noah and the will of God. And whatever befalls, if we don't see, if something happens and we're separated, It's in God's hands. And we should receive it as though it's from our Father's hands. I'm quite excited. Because we live in a time that most people have never seen. When God put his stamp so deniably on the whole world, everybody knows that they can't do anything about a virus. And we don't even know if it's animal or plant. We don't know how it does what it does. But it does what it does. Only God knows how it works right now. And so that undeniably is God's stamp on this generation and these moments. It's an exciting time to be alive. It'll be an exciting time to go to heaven. We might have the inside story by the end of the week. Who knows? God bless you.